COO, Portland.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Our guest tonight is Scott Oldham, Painters District Council 5 representative, here to talk with us about the Summer of Chaos. Hey, Scott.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great. Thanks for being here.
Good. Thank you.
So, on Friday, May 21st, painters picked up picket signs instead of spray painters outside the McDaniel High School construction site. For the first time in over 40 years, members of Painters Local 10 were on strike. Tell us what happened that day, Scott.
So, yeah, that was it's called unfair labor practice. And like you said, it's been over 40 years. It was 1977 when we last picked up a picket sign. And so we went out to a rather large project. This is a school that's going on with Portland Public Schools. And we went out there with our unfair labor practice. We had approximately 15 workers out there. And then plus some, we also invited other members to come out that morning as well, and some staff from the IUPAT Local 10, and set up a picket line. And it was amazing. It was an amazing experience for the simple fact that the building trades were all there, and they recognized the picket line immediately. And it was just a very historic moment. There was a gentleman there he was like a third generation painter in our local. And he had been waiting for this for his entire career. And so anyway, he drove up from Astoria just to be there in the morning. And of course, these things started we start these things at like 5:30 in the morning. So he made the trip. It was well worth it. And it was just an amazing event. And he was quite taken back by it. I think he may even have cheered up a bit.
When you say that the other building trades recognize the picket line, what do you mean?
So in most, I think all construction building trades, CBAs or collective bargaining agreements, they have the right to honor a picket line. So when they see a picket line up, they can decide to go ahead and turn away and respect that line and go ahead and turn away and either go back home or be reassigned to a different project. So it's one of the most important things I think that we have in our CBAs besides the grievance procedure. Is that right to respect a picket line?
So 40 years without a strike, and now you're talking about a summer of chaos. So what brought you to this point?
So the summer of chaos was essentially is that we went into bargaining, and during the bargaining, the contractors had told us that, hey, like, there's not much work coming up. Everything's unstable. And they were really more talking about the unstable environment ahead of them. And so we simply made an information request from them and said, hey, if things are unstable, tell us all of the jobs that you have lined up. You know, we call it, you know, jobs in the pipeline. And typically in the industry, we say, you know, you have 6 months or 12 months. And if you have 12 months in the pipeline, like, you're doing really well. And if you have 18, you're in a boom like recently. And so we just wanted to have, you know, an idea for bargaining, like, what does that look like to you? And so maybe we can adjust our expectations from that. And three of the contractors, and we asked them individually, three of them refused to give us the information. And that is some basic information that we're entitled to. And so with that, we filed an unfair labor practice, usually called an ULP, with the board. And then with that ULP, then you can go out on a picket, and basically you're in protest of the unfair labor practice at that moment.
So, but what has happened with the economy, the employers, how has the union changed? I mean, 40 years without a strike.
So I think what What I've noticed out of the and looking back on history, because I'm a bit of a history buff myself, and of course running a local, you need to know what your history was of how you got here. And I've been working on that pretty much since I began my membership back in February of 2002. So what had happened is in 1984, actually. So, you know, they got a big raise in 77. They won that, by the way. I think they got like $1.25, I believe, or I think was the number. But in the 80s, for those of you who are old enough, remember that the 80s was a terrible time, in 84 especially. And so the contractors and the union pretty much kind of split apart. And by split apart, I mean that, like, couldn't come to agreement on anything. And so when they did kind of get back together, it took a little over a year to kind of come to an agreement. But when they got back together, they said, hey, you know what? We're at such odds. What we'll do is we'll put in mandatory arbitration. And mandatory arbitration basically says you cannot go on strike. If you come to a dead end, the two of you agree to go to mandatory arbitration. Whatever happens in arbitration is what is your fate. And unfortunately for arbitration is those folks don't have a labor background. They don't necessarily have a construction background. And so we tend to lose every time we went to arbitration throughout the years. So what happened then from 84 all the way to present is that the power was all on the contractor side. So there was never any leverage for the Local 10 and the painters to kind of stand up against them whenever they felt like there was bad numbers given to them or benefits and all that kind of stuff. So it was that's what created this imbalance. And so that's where we're at now.
Well, how did you get the strike back?
So the first thing I did, I organized for approximately 6 years here for the IUPAT, and then got to step in as business rep and went on to be elected as business rep. But the first thing I did when I became a business rep, I said, I had to make goals. And the first goal was to ensure that our pension was well taken care of. And that was our priority throughout my tenure here. And then the other thing was to remove that strike. So I went to a labor attorney day one and said, how do we get this thing out of here? And it turns out it's not a mandatory subject of bargaining. And so we just said that we were going to remove it in negotiations. They thought that sounded like a crazy idea, that nobody had ever removed it. And so it was in place. And I think they just took me a little lightly. I think they remembered that I was a painter. And so they simply just didn't do anything about it. And we got to the end of the negotiations and I said, okay, well, that's gone. And sure enough, that was all we had to do. That was it. It was gone. Who knew? You just had to say it.
That's incredible.
I did click my heels 3 times just in case.
Hey, before we go any further with the latest developments for the painters, tell our listeners about the type of work your members do. What kind of skills are needed? How is it different than other building trades? How would someone get into the union? How would someone enter the apprenticeship program? What's the job like? What are the dangers, the rewards, that kind of thing?
So we represent 740 members approximately, and they work down in the shipyards. They work on bridges. They stripe the highways. They do the big and small commercial projects. What else do we do? I think we work a lot in the like Intel and different fab projects like that. And we do, you know, specialty coatings. As far as getting into that, the hazards of that is that, you know, a lot of these products are pretty toxic. And so, you know, safety, I mean, this is one great reason why you need a union is that we are exposed to a lot of chemicals. And so having the proper personal protective equipment is key. And that's one thing that we did along the way is, like, for instance, having a respirator. You would think that would be a pretty standard thing for painters, but the fact is that it's actually, according to OSHA, regulated by the contractor. And so not all contractors are equal. And so,
wow, the union terrible.
So the union kind of took over that part of it, the training center actually. And so that way everybody's properly fitted, everybody's knowledgeable about it and certified. And I think that's critical. I wish that could happen for all painters, union and non-union. That would be a big help. Can you fill out some of the other questions?
I imagine people listening to this are thinking, hey, being a painter, that sounds kind of cool. I'd like to have a job where we've got a militant union and we're having a summer of chaos. That sounds great. How would someone, get into this industry and join the union?
Yeah. So and I would tell the, I would tell everyone this, is that the first thing you should do is go onto the Oregon site, the State of Oregon site, and it's a thing called BOLI, which is Bureau of Labor and Industries. On there, they have tons of apprenticeships listed on there. And they will, I think they, and they believe, yes, they do even call them out as union or non-union. I would suggest you get into a union, obviously. But they would just go onto the website, find out, hey, where does this place exist? They all have phone numbers and emails, and you can just get a hold of them and say, hey, I'm interested in the painting trade. I want to be a bridge painter, or I want to be a highway striper, or I want to, you know, paint walls and whatever it is. But anyway, so this training center, I mean, you kind of go in there. It's a pretty easy process. We have removed the education piece on this. You know, it seemed to be a hindrance to people to have sometimes a high school diploma. We kind of removed that barrier, and we believe that we can teach you everything you need to know about painting, and a formal education necessarily isn't always necessary. So you sign up for the apprenticeship, and they just run you through a 3-year program. It's approximately 6,000 hours of on-the-job training. You get paid during that 6,000 hours, which takes approximately a little more than about 3 years. And then also you have in-class time too. It's scheduled at about 144 hours for each year. So it's a great experience. We turn out about 10 apprentices a year. And as a matter of fact, I think for about the last 2 years, I'm pretty excited about this accomplishment. I will go ahead and toot my own horn on this one, is that we really try to reach out to women to bring them into the trades. And we do have the highest percentage of women in the apprenticeship at this time, and have held that for a couple of years now. And I think it's close to about 26-27%.
That's excellent.
And so what are the wages and benefits like?
So the on the benefit side, you have full family health care, and it's an 80-20 plan, meaning you pay 20% and they pay, it's actually not insurance, it's actually called a trust. And the great thing about this, though, is that the maximum out of pocket for the entire family that you can spend in a year is $3,500. And so that ensures you that you don't go into bankruptcy because you had something go wrong with you. So excellent health care. And then the benefit side is $5.55 an hour goes into your pension. And that pension, of course, is yours forever. After you become vested, vested takes about 5 years to become vested. But after that, if you were to choose another career, that money will still be there when you go to retire. And so we find that most painters, after you're here, you're about your seventh year, all of a sudden you realize that the real reason you're here is working for that pension and trying to move that number up, and so that you can have some enjoy retirement with some dignity. And I think that's why I'm here. One of the bigger reasons why I'm here. And then the wages vary for a journeyman painter. They start at somewhere around $26.56, and then an industrial painter is like $28, and a bridge painter is around $34 an hour.
And you're trying to bump that number up.
So yeah, the $26.56 is a journeyman commercial painter is kind of where we're focused at right now, is moving that wage up. And if you look back at just the last 20 years, the average wage increase, and because there was deficits in there, like you lost a dollar or you didn't, or you had a wage freeze and all that. Basically, it came up to 31 cents a year per year for the last 20 years. And so which is less than 2% climb, which means our buying power, you know, this career as a buying power is just diminished greatly. And so it's when we got our strike back. So we thought, hey, here we go. Like, let's do the right thing here and pull everybody together in solidarity and go down this road. And I can tell you that we've been like moving towards this direction for many years. As a matter of fact, we have a strike fund that's, of course, I can't say how much it is because we don't let the contractors know, but I can say it's incredibly sizable. But we've been saving that up for years and years and years, well over a decade. And it's just for the hope that one day that we would get the strike back, and just for the hope that one day that we would be able to stand up and together and come together in solidarity, which is, as you know, no small feat to get people together.
Right. So let's talk about that. Give us an update. What's happened for you and the painters since that first Friday in May?
So we went on several unfair labor practice pickets. We actually worked hard to be too impactful on the industry. And I know that may sound a little strange, but the fact is that, you know, we have long-term relationships with all these contractors, you know, and so, you know, in the end, we're all going to have to be in the same room together. And so we didn't want to just completely tear the thing down and burn everything down. We kind of wanted to show them that, hey, that we can, you know, we can protest, right? And I think from there, we just, you know, kind of like trying to, you know, like, hey, like, you know, please hear us. You know, I mean, really what we're saying all along this time is this, please hear us. And because of the fact that for all those decades, they didn't have to listen to us because we didn't have any power. And so I think we're kind of at a transitional point here where they're actually going to have to listen to the workers now. And so,
and if you've just tuned in, this is KBOO 90.7 Portland Labor Radio. You've been listening to Scott Oldham of the District Council 5 Painters Union. And KBOO is listener-supported community radio, non-corporate, and we depend on you to keep us going. So make a contribution at kboo.fm.
It's the day today, actually tomorrow morning at 7 a.m., which we're going to do what's called a whipsaw strike. And a whipsaw is where you take one company out of the painting contractors organization and you strike them only. And a strike in this instance means an economic strike. And an economic strike is that once you go on economic strike, you don't go back until you get a deal. So this is a big step. Before, on these ULPs, you could hit here and move to the next site and move amongst different contractors who you had ULPs against. But the economic strike is, once you're there, like you're there, there's no backing out. And so tomorrow morning at 7 a.m., we actually begin the first company and start that strike. And we have, and I know that everybody thinks that, hey, like, you know, like everybody just goes on strike. But the fact is that there are company, I think they call them company men, company workers that are out there that are not going to respect the picket line. They're not going to respect the strike. And they may continue to work. We've gone, of course, and talked to everyone along the way, and we have well over 80% of the unit, of that particular unit, committed to going on strike and withholding their labor until we can get a good deal. So it's pretty exciting in, 14 hours from now.
and of course, you're not announcing who it is until it happens.
No, I think I can go ahead and let you know. It's called Signer and Company. And I don't think it's any surprise at this point with all that's been going on in our world. And so anyway, so it's Signer and Company. We're starting there, and we feel as though we picked that particular company because his company, or he represents the bargaining committee for the management side. And so he's kind of an obvious target. He put himself up there as a leader. And, you know, with leadership comes responsibility. So that's why we chose him.
Wasn't Ian Signer the guy that drove past your picket and yelled at you guys?
Yes. That was a bit surprising, is what I will say, to be polite.
For our listeners who are hearing this show, you will notice that there was no strike on Thursday, the 24th. This originally being recorded on Wednesday, the 23rd, the threat of a strike caused the contractor, Signer, to go back to the negotiating table with a better offer. So, again, there may be a strike by the time you listen to this, but not on that Thursday, the 24th. But yes. Signer is a particularly nasty target. I was out on the picket line with you on Friday the 18th.
Yes.
Not at a job site, but at the company headquarters. And what were you trying to do with that picket?
So that was interesting. So these unfair labor practices, we had been on a Christensen Oil and doing a picket there for several days in protest, and then we stopped the picket there, and the five gentlemen who were painting there, who respected the line all through those 6 days, of course, if we don't show up there with a picket, then they just have to go to work. Well, they went to go to work. They said, yeah, we don't have any work for you today. And then the following day, they said, yeah, we don't have any work for you at all, as a matter of fact, and we won't have any work for you, you know, for another week. And of course, we seen that, and they all knew it was retaliation for sticking with the union. And so that was, to us, like, it really just too far. And so we called on the rest of the employees of Signer and Company to go ahead and join us down at his office. And that means, like, don't go to work today. Come down here and protest this unfair labor practice with us at his shop. And so we had a really good turnout. I was pleased with the turnout. And it was a big move. I mean, it was a big day for you to, like, not go. I mean, we go to work every day, you know, all through the pandemic, we didn't miss any days at all. Like, we all went to work every day. And to ask somebody to come and picket and protest your employer, it's a big thing. It takes a lot. And so I was absolutely impressed at the workers, you know, will to stand together with those five who had been laid off. And so it was it's one of those moments. We don't get a lot of, we don't feel like there's a lot of wins sometimes. It's a lot of struggle and a lot of fighting and stuff. And it just felt like that day actually was a win, Jamie.
Well, now, Signer, this was the Christian Oil is the job site, and Signer is the contractor. Is that right?
Correct.
And doing some painting. Does Signer have some other job sites, or is it just this one site?
No, he has several job sites around the city, of course, just like all contractors do at any one time. And they had another project out at Reed College. They were doing exterior out there. It's a home that the Reed College owns, and I believe they kind of lease it out to alumni or something like that. But anyway, they were doing a project there. So we headed over there and did picket for a few days over there.
It's great that you've been able to get such high participation in your pickets. It sounds like your unfair labor practice strikes, the one day strikes, depend on other unions to honor your picket line and to be able to shut down a construction site. So how are you able to maintain such strong labor solidarity and community support in your struggle?
I said before, like, we've been working on this for many years, and I'll give everybody, for organizers out there was one trick that I thought, I don't know if it's a trick or not, but anyway, one thing that I thought was that I would do mailers out to the membership, and on the mailer, if you filled out the mailer, it says, hey, what size t-shirt are you, or what size sweatshirt are you? And if you filled it out and then you took a picture of it and you texted it back to me, then you got this free shirt or sweatshirt. And I know it seems small, but it's just like, it's people engaging with you and having a personal conversation. And in the end, we all know that personal conversations is the only way to do this, that we love to rely on Facebook and all these other items, but it's really about, you know, that one-on-one discussion with them. And then you just simply ask people, you know, like, how are you feeling about this situation? How are you feeling about your benefits? How are you feeling about the wages? Do you think you're being treated fairly? And the fact is they have all the answers. And those are the things that I need to say when I'm in front of the contractors and when in negotiations. So for me, it was just making sure that I've got their message right. And so that when I went in front of them, that I would at least be able to say it. And like I said before, I don't think they are listening to us, you know, because we hadn't had that power, but I still thought it was important that we say the things that they were feeling. So.
Great advice.
All right. Pro tip right there. There you go.
When I was out at Signer's at your picket line, I noticed there were folks from wearing union gear and t-shirts from other unions, including Laura's union, AFT.
Yes.
I'm with the letter carriers. And how important is it? And I noticed some folks from Jobs with Justice. How important is it to have community support for these actions?
it was actually one of the first things that the members, when we started talking about, like, hey, like, we might be going down the road of a strike, one of the first things that they said is, what will the other building trades do? Like, that was their first one. And they're like, you know, are we going to be all alone on this? And so I went around to all the building trades first and simply started asking. I made up a really simple resolution that said, yep, we stand in solidarity with you, brothers and sisters, as you work towards your goals. And took that course to the Northwest Oregon Labor Council and shopped it around some different places. And just to be able to go back to the membership whenever we have the, every time we gather together, I definitely go into, hey, here's who's supporting you, you know, IBW 48 or, you know, the iron workers, the 701 or, you know, AFT, you know, like you mentioned AFT, you know, Jaime Rodriguez is out there. He's the president of AFT. And it was very, I've known him for many years, and it surely felt like, you know, like he recognized, like, we've been in the struggle for a long time. So it was kind of a, it was just kind of a, you know, monumentous day. And it was nice to see everyone out there supporting us. And the members absolutely see that. They're like, who are these people? And then I tell them, and they're like, oh, wow, like, they care. Like, I thought we were all alone. So it absolutely matters. So if you see anything out there, Jamie, as you know, and you were out there, you know, when you see people in those struggles, it's important just to go out there and maybe even just spend an hour or two on their picket line with them or whatever action they're doing. It means a lot.
Well, your members voted 95% to authorize an unlimited strike, what's known as an economic strike, if necessary. So given the employer's stance so far, do you think you'll need to call an all-out strike?
Yeah, and we just spoke about that, but basically, well, I guess tomorrow is just one contractor. I think that that's going to have a incredible effect. The fact is I am not excited about doing a complete all-out, but the fact is that we are now prepared to do an all-out strike. You know, we do go back into negotiations on Friday, and we actually have requested a federal mediator, and we've met once with them before. And so this will be our second meeting with the federal mediator. And so I'm hoping that on that day that we can come to agreement, because the fact is that, you know, there's a lot of work to be done out there, and we want to keep, you know, our contractors viable. But at the same time, you know, we also need to be taken care of as well. So we'll see. We'll see.
with this strike against Signer, should scare some of the other contractors. So tell our listeners how they can keep in touch, because obviously things are changing from day to day. Yeah, how can people find out where the strike is happening or where the picket line, where they can show up, how they can be of support?
I think I will continue to. And I've put some stuff on there, and Jamie, you understand that these things have strategies to them. And sometimes we ask for community support, and other times we kind of need them low key. And sometimes they're right off the cuff and have to be announced like minutes before they happen. But we do have a Facebook page, IUPAT Local 10. And we do post on there occasionally to kind of keep people like, hey, what's happening in the world. But you know, as this stuff goes, it's not all of it can be just telegraphed. But so anyway, IUPAT Local 10 on Facebook.
Well, on another but very related topic, the painters have been such strong advocates for the PRO Act. This is the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, a transformative piece of national legislation that would make it much easier to organize, win, and enforce collective bargaining agreements. Why has your union been such a staunch fighter for the PRO Act?
We are big on organizing. We think that organizing should be of the highest priority for a union. And one thing about the labor laws is they do not work in, and when you're trying to organize a unit, those workers are up against a lot of odds. And the fact is, I'm sure you've seen, you know, Bezos and everybody else who's governors who come against unions and just chilled and put the ice on organizing campaigns, and there's no consequence essentially for it. So the ability to go out there and just organize a new shop is just incredibly, incredibly difficult. And I think if you looked at the stats on that, you would see it's almost, you know, I wouldn't say impossible, but man, I mean, it's in the low percentile to get that done. And so the PRO Act would absolutely work to help that situation. And I believe that there's a ton of information out there. And if anybody isn't familiar with the PRO Act, definitely they should be jumping online. And again, there's a ton of good information out there to explain probably better than I could. But I just know that it's essential. It's essential if we're gonna continue to be successful.
That wraps it up for our week's episode of Labor Radio this Monday, every Monday at 6 p.m. on KBOO 90.7 FM. And we've been talking with Scott Oldham of the Painters District Council 5. Thank you, Scott, for coming on Labor Radio.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
Right. Thanks, Scott.
I'm Jamie Partridge with Laura Wadlin. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
Baby, you understand me now.